Well, hey, everybody, this is Dave. I hope you guys are doing great, and remember to manage the background noise to stay on Star 6 until you're ready to talk. You saw that I sent around a white paper on the brain science of story. That's really sort of an answer, or at least a way of addressing a number of questions that some of you had and sent in. And I again, very much appreciate that. And here's the succinct version of that answer. Rather than trying to convince somebody or sell what you have to offer or persuade somebody to do coaching with you or try to convince them or in any way to give information or to teach, remember it's about the client, not about you. Offer a sample session. And this will give the best idea of what it would be like to work together in professional coaching, and it will give the client the best experience of having a sense of effectiveness of working with you for 10 or 15 minutes, and it will be the best way, initially especially, to build your practice. Notice in the white paper that I sent you, three or so pages in, there's a recommendation about how to make a recommendation for your professional coaching services. If you think of the analogous situation of any other professional making a recommendation for their services, a doc, a dentist, a financial expert, a CPA, an attorney, you have a discussion, and then the professional makes a recommendation of what it would involve and what to expect from the client and what to expect from the professional. There are three components. It can be done very clearly, briefly, and succinctly in the configuration of a story: the challenge, the development, the resolution. There's an example in there of what I have seen to work the best in making a recommendation, because the clarity and the confidence that you have in making the recommendation will be the primary factor that determines whether someone signs on for your services or declines your services. So, and think about if you were to go to a doc and you had an issue, you had some questions, a problem, and the doc would say, well, what do you think about us working together? Or let's see what we can do. You're out of there. Or you should be. You want somebody who'll do an assessment, because that's what you're paying him or her for, and a recommendation about exactly what it's involved, because it's about you, the patient. Here, as a coach, it's about your client. So you're making a recommendation of what in your assessment would be the best way to proceed in working with you. So look at that and see if that answers some of the questions about how to represent yourself, how to get clients, how to think about making a recommendation about your services for clients. Questions, thoughts? Anyone want to add anything or discuss anything briefly before we move into our material?
Hey, this is Arthur Jones.
Hey, welcome.
Thank you. I was trying to figure out when you sent that out. I did not receive that white paper. I've been looking through my emails as well as my junk, and I haven't seen anything.
Okay. I sent it 2 days ago. today is Monday. I'm sorry. I sent it Sunday because it was the for the next day, and I said tomorrow. So it came late in the day Sunday. It was addressed to everyone who I have on my list as registered, and the attachment was the white paper. If you still don't find it, send me an email and I'll fire it back to you, okay?
Yeah, I can do that. I just once again I went through it and I just sent you an email.
Okay, send me an email and I'll get it to you. Sorry that something happened. Thanks for mentioning, Arthur. Appreciate it. Who else? What you got?
Hi, David. This is Jaden.
Welcome. Hey, yeah.
So in your white paper, I was really drawn to the part about the internal story and the external story and the conflict or similarities between them. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that.
I'm sorry. I was looking at your note about how you can convince people of the benefits of wellness, mindfulness, if they're skeptic.
That one as well, yes. Very important.
That was what I was commenting about. Because you never have to convince anybody. It's not about convincing, selling, persuading. It's about addressing what someone's primary challenge is. That's the beginning of a story, to understand the challenge of your client, and then to address how you might collaboratively move to a point of satisfaction for the client. So that's about the offering of your professional services. So ask your question again now. I want to be clear specifically what it is.
Sure. So I guess in the lines of what you were just talking about, in addressing that challenge, is that where the recommendation comes in of the coach saying, I believe this is what the challenge is? Or is it up to the client to say that they've discovered for themselves what the challenge is if they haven't seen that in themselves before?
Okay, I think if I understand, it's none of the above. let me be very clear about what I recommend, because the point of reference is always the client, so you'll want to get the challenge from the client. So here, in my view, is the best preparation for a sample session. When you offer a sample session and specify the time and agree on a date, the two things that I would suggest you offer to that person you're going to be talking to in a few days or whenever, I think it will give us both the best idea of what it would be like to work together in professional coaching if you have a specific focus of what you'd like us to address and a destination of where you'd like us to get to at the end of that discussion. So when you begin that session, the client calls you, for example, or connects with you on video conference, you want to know the agenda, you want to know what the focus is, and then after you're clear about that, you'll want to know what the client would like to, where the client would like to get to. So that's the challenge and the resolution already preformed. You're just going to do the jazz in the middle and fill out the development. So the end of the session, if you allow 15 minutes, I'd say stick to it, because you're establishing a model of what it's going to be like to work together by establishing an agenda by the client that the client determines. You have framed a potential effectiveness for both of you addressing that. So you're going to have the best possibility of working further with that client because you've established a model of how to focus and be effective. Now, the recommendation at the end of that 15 minutes, I would say allow 2 or 3 minutes for that. That's what I'm talking about, and that's what I'm referring in the white paper. So here's how that may sound. For example, and this is, you know, don't write it down, but just listen to it to see if it makes sense to you. We focused on an aspect of what I think is a significant issue that we could address and be of great benefit to you in professional coaching. Here's what I would recommend: that we establish a standing time of 50 minutes each week where you call me. I'll send you a client information packet for you to fill out to give us both an idea of the scope and the focus of what you want. I'll send you also a link for online payment of a monthly retainer that will cover all of the sessions each week, whatever material and resources I send, and emails in between. My monthly retainer is whatever you decide it is, the money, questions. So in two or three sentences, you've made a recommendation that is in a story form itself. The challenge, the development, the resolution in three short sentences, and you've made a clear professional recommendation that's unequivocal so the client knows exactly what to expect and they can ask you questions and you can talk about it if there's anything that's unclear. Now, does that make sense and does that answer your question?
Yes, that's a lot clearer. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks. Other thoughts or questions? Then we'll move right into our discussion, and I'll be sure that we have some time at the end. Okay, we've discussed the first four steps. Recognize authorship of your wellness story, own your story, assess the plot and storylines, and then decide what to change. This seminar, we're going to talk exclusively about step five. Map wellness strategies. So here's a kind of review and preface for this. Insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story. How many people do you know who can tell you all there is to know about something they're struggling with? They're experts on diet or weight or nutrition, yet they haven't changed. Many years ago, when I treated severe anorexics in a hospital setting when I was still practicing psychiatry psychoanalysis, they each knew more about food and nutrition than in my entire treatment team of nine experts and myself combined. Underlying causes are always present for any problem, often complex, multi-determined causes. A coaching approach, though, is to use causes, feelings, and history only as information. At times, simply doing what is currently effective dissolves barriers. As coaches, we focus on the choice architecture of the present moment, to look at the possibilities and the challenges rather than going backwards to look at problems or understanding origins. And at times, people may need nudges when they're least likely to make good choices, for decisions that are difficult or rare, for which they don't get or have feedback, when they have trouble translating it into understandable terms, or when they persist in re-entering the old story, which etches it further in their brain each time. So there are six crucial elements to map change. And to look at and understand, to incorporate each of these six, you have the outline to master a life story of wellness. Let's look at each of these from a coaching perspective. One, regulate states of mind. I believe this is the most fundamental aspect of mastery that we can have, to regulate states of mind and manage emotions, because states of mind are like software programs. There's a mind-body state that determines how we perceive and process information and how we respond. We each have a set of different states of mind, a lot of different software programs, relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention, peak performance. A key element is to be aware of our different states of mind and know which state works best for what purpose. A simple example, creative writing versus editing. Two different states of mind, two different parts of the brain. Brainstorming versus completing a project. Two different parts of the brain. When someone is in an emotional state, they may be partly to surely marooned in their right brain, the feeling intuitive brain. The emotional brain can even hijack the intellectual logical brain and hold it hostage. So let's look briefly then at how to regulate states of mind. I believe this is the most important thing we can do to achieve success is to manage emotions and regulate states of mind. And I mentioned before, in a couple of recent studies, Scientific American Mind, Harvard Business Review, the finding was that the premier aspect of the success of executives was this factor, managing emotions, regulating states of mind, and developing self-reflection. Now, that was only because that's all they measured, executives. I think it's true for everyone across the board. So think about this for a minute. What do these people have in common? John Belushi, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Kurt Cobain. They never learned the critical success strategy of regulating their states of mind. Using drugs, alcohol, or some other addictive substance or process to regulate a state of mind and manage emotions can lead to significant compromise. Your state of mind, the particular software program you use at any instant, determines the meaning you attach to any stimulus. The meaning you attach then determines your behavior. Now, the state of mind determines the meaning we attach, and the meaning determines behavior. So by changing the state of mind, we change the behavior. There are two primary ways to regulate a state of mind: physiology and focus. Physiology is how you use your body. For example, deep breathing, relaxation, meditation. Focus is what and how you focus on. And this is from quantum physics and brain science. You get what you focus on, not what you want. Focus aligns your energy field. That's what a powerful question does. It aligns the energy field of the person. They're in the middle of their second paragraph, and you ask a question, and boom, it focuses their attention. Perhaps even more dramatically, there's an inconsolable infant. Nobody can comfort, nobody can calm, except suddenly someone jangles car keys right in front of their face, and instantly there's a focus on that and a state change. Focus aligns the energy field of the brain. So the power is what you're focused on. Your power is what you focus on. Your state of mind determines the meaning you attach. The meaning you attach will determine your behavior. So things that we're always asking ourselves, whether consciously or not, what does this mean? What should I do? So the quality of our life comes down to the quality of the questions you ask daily. If your questions are not working, ask a better question. I recently, this last week, our session was focusing on this. This was an athlete. We were doing performance coaching, and he was in a slump. It was having a major impact on his career. And we looked specifically at what was the first thing he thought about when he woke up. And he was thinking about some aspect of his slump. How's he going to screw up? What's going to happen? There's going to be a setback. Is it going to affect his status? A number of things. And he recognized that as soon as he woke up, he was asking himself questions, and these questions put him in a lousy state of mind. So I suggested that since the framing of his state that he engages the day begins with when he wakes up, to write beforehand, like the day before, the night before, three questions that are empowering and put him in a very positive, engaged state of mind, to keep it by his bedside, and before his feet ever hit the floor, to take that paper and to answer those questions. Within the second day, he was out of his slump, no more chokes, and he recognized how powerful he could do this in his own way. So asking a better question, especially beginning in the day, will be essentially powerful. What will I create today that will be more powerful than I ever dreamed of and had fun doing? you guys, most of you have heard me repeatedly quote my favorite grandmother, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Now, of course, having fun creates a very positive mindset. Your brain follows your focus, whether that's positive or negative. So be sure and ask the questions that empower you, not something disguised as a way to reverse something negative, but a positive focus. Asking effective questions determines your state of mind. This is your powerful focus. This is your power of asking habitual questions to empower you. The best mentors, leaders, teachers are ones who ask the best questions to get us to use our own resources. This is why you began a coaching engagement, a session, with a question, because it begins the client opening to consider something to engage collaboratively with you. If you give information, the person is going to, consciously or not, compare what they already believe with the information you give. And here's what we know now. When someone does that, they will find ways to refute what they hear from you if it doesn't fit with what they already believe, or find ways to search out and positively agree with you if it already fits. So this is also the boomerang effect, that the smarter someone is, the more effectively they will be able to counter new information and stick with their belief system, and it will have the opposite effect of what's intended. So, the best questions. People thought Goliath was too big to hit. David just asked, well, if he's that big, how could I miss? Starbucks founder Howard Schultz didn't ask if people want to buy a cup of coffee or a latte, but do you want to sense a concept of community, a third place between home and work? So here's an exercise to see if it works for you. Write down three questions that put you in a peak state. Each morning, answer those three empowering questions and feel the answer. And remember, you're already asking questions. This may not be conscious, but as soon as you wake up, you're already engaging the day by asking questions and thinking about what you're going to think about. This just specifically engineers the focus to consciously begin with the questions that empower you. Now, here's how focus and physiology can be helpful. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach Robert Reed arrived, his team ranked 217th in free shot percentage, lowest in their division nationwide. During practice, he had his players develop a mantra before each free shot. He suggested they hit, and a mantra has three components, a cue, a focus, a physiology. He suggested the cue to be that they dribble twice, and while they're doing that, to have a focus phrase to align, he didn't put it in this way to them, but to align the energy field of the brain. And a phrase that he suggested, but they each to develop their own, relaxed and smooth. And at the same time, to breathe one deep breath in for relaxation and breathe out any tension. So this was a 3 or 4 second process that occurred during the two dribbles. The dribbles, the focus phrase, and the physiology. Now also, he simulated game conditions. He put it in an output channel. He would blow the whistle, have them go to the line, and shoot two free throws. Now, if they made them, they got a break. If they didn't, they did laps, because in a real game, you're fouled, you're suddenly on tilt, you're reacting to, you don't get to go to the free shot line and take 30 shots and count your best. You're having to self-regulate. In 2 years, they were number one in their division nationwide in free shot percentage. So mantras can both calm as well as keep you from overthinking in high pressure situations. What you'll find is if you do the same mantra and repeat it, you'll hardwire the process. For example, I've done it enough now before a presentation, before a class or a training. I'll simply touch my index finger and thumb together on one hand. I don't need any more after all this time to say the focus phrase, to do the deep breath, but it instantly is grounding and centering because I've done it enough that the whole process has been neurally conditioned. And you'll find that the cue is simply enough to get you grounded and centered and in the state that you want to be in. And think about how you may want to have a different focus phrase that fits with the purpose of what you want to do. You know, a golfer will want to have a different focus phrase for a drive versus a putt because different energy is involved. You will want to have a different focus phrase when you're about to do a keynote as when you want to go to sleep at night and get to sleep more effectively. So have your phrase fit the task that's at hand and the state of mind that you want to enter. The number two element to map change, the power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects that frequency. It's kind of like all the channels of a radio or satellite TV are available, but we choose the channel, the frequency we want out of hundreds of possibilities. We each transmit and receive a frequency through our thoughts. So if you want to change something in your life, change the frequency. Change the channel, your thoughts. Now, the bad news, if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over again. The reason is our unconscious doesn't know the difference between positive and negative, just the focus. Now, quantum mechanics offers us still more understanding. The quantum Zeno effect, Z-E-N-O, says the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. Dr. Jeffrey Swartz at UCLA was a guest of mine on a mastermind group who originated this whole concept. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemical links by this focus actually become stable changes in the brain structure. In other words, the brain rewires. So this concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is more effective than a problem focus. These brain connections literally become mind maps and then influence the reality that we see. So new neuronal connections and pathways are created when you focus on solutions, on possibility, on challenges. If you focus on existing problems, you'll go back into the already existing circuitry. This is one of the reasons that people can get stuck in therapy. They can know all there is to know about a problem, but they don't have a new story to enter or to create. Neuroscience validates the reality that it's not understanding the source of our thoughts that's most beneficial, but a focus on awareness of choice. That's exactly what we do in professional coaching. The law of attraction is also based in neuroscience. A simple example, if you lay a nail and a paperclip side by side, nothing happens. Now, if you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paperclip. Why is that? Well, the molecules of the nail become aligned in the same direction. Same with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction and focused, you have power. And probably every one of you are familiar with the film The Secret. And the adage there is ask, believe, and receive. I think they got two of those right. The law of attraction won't give you what you want. It will give you the energy to sustain the process to create what you want, but you can't just wait to receive. This is not a passive deal. It won't send a Brinks truck up your driveway or align the lotto balls for you. Trust me on that one. I can save you a buck. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write the story if you want. So instead of ask, believe, receive, consider this, the ABCs, ask, believe, create. And also my favorite grandmother, offered her critique of the film The Secret 5 decades before it was released. She said, "Wishes don't wash dishes." Now, the paradox is we don't attract what we want. We attract what we focus on. Everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy field to pursue prosperity. And again, your unconscious doesn't register positive or negative, just the focus. It's kind of like saying a print or a negative is the same image. Your unconscious is that image. So the power of focus is that whatever you attend to or focus on, you align yourself to create, so be sure it's on the right thing. I want to get out of debt. That's a negative focus on debt. I want to lose weight. The focus is on weight. You know that won't happen either. Here's one that's kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful not to spill something on this new outfit. Dr. Joseph Murray put it very succinctly in 2 sentences. Your subconscious mind does not argue with you, but accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, "I can't afford it," your subconscious mind works to make it true. Notice which people worry about illness, which talk about pains or disorders. The people who are afraid of getting sick are the ones who get sick most of the time because that's what they're focusing on. What you worry about happens because you focus on it. So put energy into what you want. Focus on possibilities instead of problems, desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it, to add energy to it. This creates resistance. When you focus on what you don't want falls away by inattention, like your lap when you get up to walk. So the pen is in your hand to write your story. Now, the energy we're talking about is not the energy of stamina, as in tired versus refreshed, but that of the energy field, this invisible, very real connection. And quantum physics offers us still another paradigm. Bear with me here for a minute. In addition to our individual energy field, there's a collective field. Einstein called this the unified field theory. Basically, he said the human mind and body are bundles of energy and interact with another person's energy field or the larger energy field of a group. This is how we can read people, focus our choices, determine the flow of our future. I think a natural experiment is the NBA. 82 games in a regular season, let's say. 84 games, 42 at home, 42 away. Every team loses more games away than they do at home. Every team wins more at home than they do away. Positive energy field at home, negative energy field of 75 or 80,000 people when they're away. So your choices set this flow into motion just as other choices cause derailment of your of this process. You set your day in motion when you wake up happy, excited about what you'll do that day, when you have a positive focus. Now, the law of attraction is neutral and impersonal. It works equally for positive or negative thoughts, good things or bad things. You keep coming back to what you run away from. You attract what you resist because you engage it with focused attention. So the most important principle is to focus on what you do want rather than what you don't want. And remember that a lot of focus is outside awareness. So it's important to begin to be aware and target the specific outcomes that you want and to be very specific about what you do want, not just what you don't want in disguise. Well, I want a relationship in which I'm treated well. Well, there's the expectation that you won't be, and you have to reverse it. Let's do a brief exercise now. Remember, we're on lecture mode, so nobody, unless they're in the next room, can hear you. I'd like to do an articulate your unconscious exercise. Do this with me to see how it works. I'm going to make a statement, and I'd like you to follow that statement by saying out loud, your wish is my command, and to be aware of your experience as you say, your wish is my command. I'm tired. I'm late. I'm overweight. I'm eating healthily all day. I worked out and I feel energetic. Now reflect on your experience, your sense of energy, your sense of well-being, just your immediate experience with the I'm tired, late, overweight. If there was a difference with the your wish is my command to eating healthily and working out. If there was a difference, a shift, even slightly, in your experience of your energy. Two quotes. Wisdom is learning what to overlook. This is from William James, the father of American psychology. This is what we do in helping a client and ourselves focus, because the other part of what you focus on is all the things that you screen out and give inattention to. That's huge. And the other, again, from my favorite grandmother, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. That bears repeating. So here's a final vignette on focus. One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson about a battle between two wolves inside all of us. One is evil, anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, lies, false pride. The other is good, joy, peace, love, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, generosity, truth, compassion. The grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his granddad, which wolf wins? The old Cherokee simply said, the one you feed. 3, visualize changes. This was the prototype study that ushered in a whole number of other ones. Basketball players at Ohio State University were divided into 3 groups to practice shooting free throws. One group, no practice for a month. Another group, 30 minutes of practice daily for 30 days. Another group, they practiced imagining shooting perfect free throws, nothing but net, for 5 minutes a day for 30 days. They were tested at the end of 30 days. The first group, no practice, 0% improvement. The second group, actual practice, 30 minutes daily, 24% improvement. The third group, by visualization only, 23% improvement. Now, what we know now is that the visualization can exceed the actual practice, because every time you miss, you're grooving a mistake. Practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. So only perfect practice makes perfect. And that's by visualizing specifically what you want, because that rewires your brain. A visualization rewires your brain. And there's some material on this in the outline and in the workbook about how visualization works and how to do that in a more systematic way. Because when you create a vision, including all of the sensory detail, all the components, and revisit that vision at the beginning and the end of each day, it actually rewires your brain. And affirmations are the story that support that vision, and they help to revise mind software. So the art and the neuroscience of a vision and of affirmations can be especially helpful, because your brain can't tell the difference between what you actually see through the optic nerve and what you envision, that you imagine. And when you repeat it, when you repeat your visualization, it actually etches that as a future memory that you can then just strategically back into. And for some clients, at some times, being able to visualize is a way to help them get beyond where they have been because they don't have the experience of having a successful completion of something specifically, but when they can create a vision to do that and repeat it, it hardwires it so that experience is there just to be successively approximated and strategically planned to actually actualize it. So it's difficult to challenge long-held beliefs because they're a part of your identity. We're going to revisit that because what makes change permanent is the P in the roadmap, the seventh step to transform and revise identity along with the changes. We'll come back to that. And a vision starts at the other end, the successful outcome. So if someone has a fear of success or a fear of failure, the vision process bypasses that and etches a successful outcome. Here's a simple illustration of that. In the film, The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going. Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. And this is the neuroscience of a vision that replays of it will rewire the actual neurocircuitry of our brain. Now, here's a key. When you program your unconscious, you actually create a future memory to live into, and your brain can't tell who conjured it, you or reality. The more detailed your visual image, the more specifically etched your brain will be, especially when you incorporate all the detail of all senses. Now, here's the key. You don't make the brain changes permanent unless you incorporate it into your story, unless you make it part of your identity, of who you really are, the bedrock of the operating model that you have. Otherwise, it either doesn't register or simply gets extruded as noise, as a not-me experience. This may be why, for example, 95% of people who diet and lose weight gain back their weight, maybe many and a pound or two extra. They don't reprogram their body image. They've simply changed their body. They haven't changed their identity, their body image. For example, if you see yourself in a successful business, you create the specific imagery to live that experience, to then incorporate it as part of your identity, rather than it just being a good idea or just a series of behaviors that you engage, or even it belonging to somebody else. And you know, for example, by simply picturing a danger, it can trigger the entire body response of fight or flight. So while your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture, your conscious mind can. And your conscious mind then must incorporate it as a part of an evolving story as your identity to include and assemble this imagery as part of your story. Otherwise, the unconscious messages will delete access or even believability of the imagery. So there are three key elements. Repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be renewed and repeated regularly or they'll be eliminated. Secondly, consciously incorporate this new vision into an ongoing story to be ultimately metabolized as part of yourself, your identity. And thirdly, be very specific about the experience, the entire experience, in all sensory detail, of having achieved the goal. And a footnote here, write it down. Research on memory tells us that a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 seconds in short-term memory. Then it's gone, unless you write it down to review. What else writing it down does is to put it in an output channel. That completes the circuitry in the brain. And when you write down something that you commit to do, you are more likely to follow through because you want to be consistent with the image you have of yourself to complete it. So visualization then crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea. The experience changes your brain. So a vision serves as guide and inspiration to design ways to live it, to realize it. Here's a simple example. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During this time that he was imprisoned, he was isolated, had no physical activity. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. He had broken 100 on two occasions. He had 299s. Everything else was in triple digits. And to preserve his sanity, he decided to visualize playing golf all day, every day, 7 days a week. Did this for 7 years. He would get up each day, imagine driving to his favorite golf course, warming up, smelling the flowers, hitting the ball, walking, did this for 7 hours a day. When he was released from captivity, his first outing, he shot a 74. The power of a vision of mind over matters. Next step, mapping changes. Insight changes the brain. At the moment of insight, an aha experience, a complex new set of neural connections is created. Three parts of the brain light up on fMRI scans during a moment of insight, an aha moment. An aha activates centers in the brain to release chemicals to vault someone into a state of mind that's more synthetic and integrative and creative. Now, same happening, measuring responses on an fMRI, giving someone facts, information, directives, orders, nothing happens. No part of the brain lights up. Now, as important as this insight-induced change is, the sustained attention and repetition is what hardwires it into the brain circuits. Five, take action. Vincent van Gogh put this very simply. If you hear a voice say, "I'm not a painter," then by all means paint. Then that voice will be silenced. We also know the world will not pay you for what you know. It'll pay you for what you do. It rewards action. To analyze, plan, think, organize are important. But payday comes with action. Winners develop a plan and set it into motion. It may not be perfect, but they self-correct, keep moving forward, progress organically, learn from their mistakes, and produce results. This may be why a group of the brightest people anywhere with all kinds of degrees can plan and figure something out, but struggle to make it happen. I was in one of those groups once. Meanwhile, the guy who barely finished the first semester in community college owns a bunch of real estate on the west side of town. The most important thing about a goal is having one. The most important thing about a plan is to stick with it. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire passion, can cut through the fog like a beacon in the night. One extra degree of effort, of resilience in business, in life, can separate the good from the great. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach to publish Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. And I heard him describe this experience. 141 publishers turned down a guy with an unlikely title for a book, Chicken Soup for the Soul. He decided to publish it himself, sell it out of the back of his car. To get what you've never had, you'll probably have to do what you've never done. And six, identity transformation. This is what we'll come back to, the P and roadmap. A new experience or idea must be focused on consistently and frequently, and when attention is consistent, brain circuitry is stabilized. The mindset of identity then needs to incorporate the new experience and integrate it as part of an evolving self, as a component of one's identity. Otherwise, it's not integrated and prone to be dismissed as a not me or attributed to luck or circumstance. This is why what we're doing with clients, as we collaboratively help them catalyze change and transformation, is to consistently incorporate the recognition, the self-reflection of that, the acknowledgement of that in their evolving model of how and who they are, the bedrock of their identity. So here's a summary now, and then I'll move to a discussion mode. Here's a summary of the last two steps, of steps four and five. Decide what to change and map the changes. Since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experiences to change this wiring. And this is all in your outline. I just want to summarize this and reflect with you from last time to this time to combine these steps. Concentrate on new behaviors, not on problems, in order to create new brain pathways. Identifying a problem will not solve it. Create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits with an eye on the prize to begin to lay new mental maps. Remember we talked, whenever you have an experience of anxiety or of excitement, the brain can't tell the difference between the two. Registers in exactly the same way. So how you frame it, of anxiety or of excitement, determines how you proceed. If you frame it as a challenge, as an opportunity, then you move ahead to look at possibility. This is exactly what we do in coaching, why we don't go back into the past to understand the problems, to look at the dynamics, the origin. We're looking at and focusing on the choice architecture of this moment to look at possibilities, to shrink the change, to plan stepwise to move ahead. Regulate states of mind and manage emotions to promote brain power. New insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning, left brain plus right brain, intellectual plus emotional. That's balanced learning. Facilitate insight rather than give advice or offer problem solving or even camouflage that with a question like, well, have you thought about whatever? Facilitate the insight with the point of reference being the client's story and the development of that. When diverted to an old feeling or behavior, redirect ideas and energy flow to the new ideas, to possibility. Remember that power is in the focus, and permanent change is from the consistency of that focus. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. Focus aligns and directs both energy and efforts. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Someone begins with a problem, you may want to interrupt and say, what's the possibility here? Knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put that into behavior. And finally, think about your new experience and evolving self. how your new experiences require thinking of yourself, your identity, in an evolving, even transformative way, no longer in the old story. We're in discussion
David,
mode now. If you would manage your background noise, please. I hear my echo. Would everyone please go on mute until you're ready to make a comment or ask a question? And I welcome comments, questions, clarifications from anyone. One unmuted at a time, please.
This is Janet Bedoni. Good evening.
Welcome.
First
hey,
of
thanks.
All, no, thank you. I think one of the things that have been really incredible in everything that you said is that if you apply this not only in health and wellness, but in each area that we have to talk with the agenda that the client brings, or even our own agendas, it's like this is a secret to success. And kudos to your grandmother. Let's have fun. So thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you're right also that the best application is for us to learn and know and work on our own story so that we know that quite well we're going to be in a position to better help our clients do that, which is why I also recommend doing the exercises and the work tools in the workbook that correspond with the segment of what we're going to discuss, because it makes it very experience near and puts it into an actual practice, which is the whole process of putting it in an output channel. So, yeah, thanks for that, Janina. Who else?
Oh, Danny Bedoni, not Janina. Danny Bedoni.
Yeah, hey, go ahead, please.
No, that was me before.
Ah, okay. All right, sorry. I thought I heard differently. Did you have anything to add or follow up?
No, that was it. Just that you said another name. I was like, no, that was me.
Oh, Susie, I did, yeah.
Thanks so much. I appreciate everything.
Okay.
This is insights of insight. Thank you.
Super. Great. Who else? Thoughts, questions, clarifications? One of the questions that I saw is about, one consistent question I saw from a number of you, is about clients making change permanent. We're going to address that more specifically in our next seminar, because what makes change permanent is incorporating it into one's identity, making it part of the operating model of who and what we are. The most powerful force in the human psyche is that we return to our identity. And our identity determines so many decisions we make without ever even being conscious. Well, that's just not who I am. That's not what I do. So any change will, let me start over. Every step of change that your client will have, every step, beginning in the beginning, will be attendant with some trepidation, uncertainty, or anxiety. I think it's helpful to appreciate that and to appreciate that they're taking a risk because they're moving from a default mode instead of just repeating. Because you know what the outcome is going to be when you repeat, even though it may be limiting, you know what it's going to be. There's a kind of a satisfaction with repetition. It can masquerade as effectiveness. So be aware how every step is going to create trepidation, uncertainty, anxiety, so that you can empathically resonate with that and help your client embrace change, to look at possibility, to take a chance to move into, even more so, a growth mindset, to look at what's the possibility here, what's next. Because what's next, if it's not a repetition of the past, is going to be something new and different that may not be comfortable. And the more different it is, the bigger it is, the more uncomfortable someone will be. And that's important to recognize step by step as you're helping them incorporate the change as a process that they're engaging that will change the bedrock of how and who they are, their operating model, their sense of identity. So that's why it's so important, because we always return to it. And when that's part of the process of change itself, it can be very powerful for someone because they're setting a new default mode. It takes a while, and it takes a while to be comfortable. It takes repetition, because once we repeat something enough, the brain rewires. But right now, the brain doesn't know that yet, so your mind has to lead the way, that there's a better way than the brain preserving the way that as the brain sees, the way that things should be. The error detection mechanism says this is something different. This is not what I expected. So this is the collaborative work we do with clients in whatever aspect that they engage. Time for one more comment or one more question. We've got just
a
minute.
A question. I do.
This is
Arthur.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Arthur Jones, yeah. Last week you had mentioned that change creates dissonance. So my question is that dissonance within us, ourselves, or with others?
The internal experience of dissonance, like something's not right, something is off, this is different than what I expected. And that's your, anytime you depart from well-grooved default modes, like when you go drive the same way to work every day, after a month or so, you got it down, you listen to a book on audio. Suddenly, there's construction, you have to snake your way through a neighborhood, you have to attend to it, you have to pay attention to it. That's dissonance. It's a slight to certain discomfort because something is different and you don't know exactly how it's going to turn out. So this is where having a system and having a game plan to know that we're doing the right thing, I'm going to tolerate this dissonance because I have a greater sense of purpose and a plan, and I'm going to stick to the plan. Because that's all you need, a plan and to stick to it. You don't need motivation, as we've talked before. You don't need any number of things. You just need a plan and to stick to it. And all you ever have to do is the next right thing. And remember, we also talked about how sometimes you don't always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost assuredly know what it isn't. So it's a matter temporarily of tolerating the dissonance, the discomfort, to know that you have a higher purpose, something beyond that you're striving for, that you're willing to have the resilience and the grit to forego temporary pleasure, because it'd be easier to just go have the cheesecake with strawberry topping right now instead of work out. That's your choice point, Arthur. So thank you all very much. And remember, next seminar, let's add on 10 or 15 minutes if you have time for us to discuss, so that I want to be sure that everything, all the questions and applications that you have in mind, at least for right now, that we have a chance to talk about. So I want to tack that on and just plan for it next time so that we can just talk at the end a bit more. Thanks very much. Have a great rest of the week. I look forward to picking up with you right here next time. See you guys. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.